And you're listening to Radio Regent. This is Saturday Morning Live. My name is Mally, a.k.a. DocuVixen. We're going to go right into Mamiya Abu-Jamal.
Every year, Black History Month is celebrated from coast to coast. Great black names are recalled, their exploits praised, and February, the shortest month, staggers to an end. But what shall we say today? A month may come and go. But for millions of young black people, they'll know less and less year by year. That's because they have no idea about their history. For who will teach them? School teachers? DJs? Preachers? Rappers? Barbers? Parents? These questions aren't strictly rhetorical, for the answers to all of them are no. About a year ago, a man came up to me telling me of a discussion he had with a younger man. The younger had a question for the older. Was Martin Luther King a rapper? Think about that. Was Martin Luther King a rapper? As my mother would say, Generations ago, leaders like the great Du Bois, Paul Robeson, Malcolm X, Dr. Ben or Yusef Ben Jokanin, Dr. John Hedrick Clark, these learned men were heroes of the black world. It's not like that now, for the waters of our culture, our music, has been polluted by the greed of the corporations and their interest to bring harm to black life. Today, ignorance is bliss. History? We ain't into that. Woe to those who forget their history, for they know not from whence they came. Black history too. In our last commentary, I noted the dearth of knowledge about black history, especially by the young. For those who've lived through certain periods of black life, they know what they know, even if only filtered through the lens of a media that is the handmaiden of white power. A generation or so later, and these events fall down the rabbit hole of forgetfulness and are soon gone. It's not thought of in school or taught in school. So new generations grow into adulthood virtually ignorant of that past of conflict and struggle. The original MOVE confrontation, which flared during 1977 and 78 in Philadelphia, involving weapons fire, water cannons, wrecking cranes, and vicious beatings, also resulted in the imprisonment of 9 men and women from MOVE, called the MOVE 9. That was 36 years ago. Jimmy Carter was president. Muhammad Ali had both lost to Leon Spinks and regained his heavyweight championship belt. And the MOVE 9 were sentenced to 30 to 100 years for third-degree murder, exceeding every other such sentence in modern Pennsylvania history. Most who have examined this case have noted that although none of the women had weapons charges, all of them received the very same sentence as the men. But guess what? All of the men didn't get weapons charges, like Eddie Africa. Born and raised in West Philadelphia, he lived life like most young guys his age. He partied and he got high. But meeting MOVE changed all that. The message of MOVE entered him, radicalized him, and made him part of a movement greater than himself. According to eyewitness accounts, a cop at the scene in 78 was killed by cop gunfire, but that didn't matter. MOVE, loud, black and strong, had to be stopped, and Judge Edwin Malmed was the mechanism used to do so. So Eddie Africa, still loud, black and strong, was convicted of murder, even though never charged with having a gun, and is now being refused parole despite being 6 years over his minimum. He was 29 when he came to prison. He's now 65. Because he's a MOVE member, innocence is irrelevant. Nor is this relevant for the other 7 MOVE survivors. Neither he nor they are in prison because of either innocence nor guilt. They are in prison because they believe in the teachings of John Africa. They're MOVE members. To the system, that is unforgivable. Black History 3. In what must be the height of irony, the trial of a middle-aged man for the shooting and killing of a 17-year-old boy after hot words over so-called thug music, and his subsequent hung jury instead of a conviction. Happening during Black History Month shows us all that all is not well in America. Black boys and men are held in the lowest regard in the U.S. That was so historically. That is so now. Partly because to the judiciary, to white America, and far too often to Black America as well, Black life is cheap. Some will undoubtedly dispute this, but ponder an event where a Black adult peeved at heavy metal played by a vanload of white teens unloads into a vehicle, killing one youth. Is there any serious question that he would soon be a denizen of death row? But the social fear of Black men by white men strengthened a defense that almost won an acquittal. That is a commentary on the law, on the courts, and on society at large. It is also a reflection on how Black men are still perceived in America. A truth. White men fear Black men. It may be deep and irrational, but that doesn't make it any less real. In fact, it makes it more so. A century ago, during the teens of the 20th century, Blacks, men and women, just a generation out of slavery, experienced a national wave of white racist violence. Blacks were lynched by the thousands of what W.E.B. Du Bois called Red Summer. This violence went on with the silent acquiescence of government, state and federal. One of the triggers of that violence, white male fear and anxiety that Black men, newly freed, would seek white women as sexual partners. That psychology of fear continues today, now shielded by the illusions of politics, law, and entertainment. A teenager mouths off to a middle-aged man, and the white man doesn't see a boy, a teenager. He sees a Black man, and fear floods his neurons. That's the snapshot of Black America, 2014. It ain't pretty, but it is what it is. Chakwe Lumumba, presente. His name was Chakwe Lumumba. And for over 40 years, he was a people's lawyer dedicated to the needs of the Black nation. As a young lawyer in Detroit, he worked to defend members of the nationalist group, the Republic of New Africa, after their members were attacked by police and many were arrested back in 1981. When he signed on to defend RNA members Bilal Sunni Ali and Fulani Sunni Ali, the judge went out of his way to remove him from the case. But Lumumba and the Alis fought to reverse this order, and sure enough, it got reversed. That fierce determination fueled him through an exemplary career in law, and he developed the nationalist practice that attracted radicals and revolutionaries as clients. When famed rapper Tupac Shakur was charged with aggravated assault on several cops, Lumumba represented him and beat the case. When the Scott sisters were fighting an unjust conviction, Chakwe Lumumba convinced the Mississippi governor, Haley Barbour, to free them in 2011 after over 17 years in prison. When he entered electoral politics, Jackson, Mississippi would become his city after election as mayor. He was able, imaginative, and determined. Chakwe Lumumba, after 66 years of life, recently joined his ancestors. He never stopped fighting for the freedom of Black people. Bullies of Babylon. The U.S. Senate rejection of U.S. Department of Justice nominee Debo Adegbile for the post of head of the Civil Rights Division is more than anything the triumph of fear and lies over reason and fact. Adegbile, by all accounts, is an able, skilled litigator who had been an exemplary candidate for the post. But the Broad Street Bullies, also known as the FOP, had other ideas, and they didn't let truth get in their way. In a mad attempt to hurt me, they slimed a man whom they neither knew nor cared to know. And moreover, they soiled their own constitution, you know, that document they swear to obey, honor, and protect. For it is bitter irony that the man nominated for the nation's highest civil rights post was himself denied the civil right of due process and the human right of self-defense. And this is so simply because he dare to do what defense lawyers are legally and constitutionally required to do, defend their clients. For this, he was spat upon by vile men. For this, he was denied by a raft of lies. What do you call a country where cops decide who will be judges, prosecutors, and government officials? We call it a police state. And the greasy politicians who are paid to support this path, who, too, swore on the Constitution only to shred it, will usher in an era that will inevitably turn on them. The late Albert F. Sabo, a judge, my judge, who was so biased he became an embarrassment on the bench, was a life member of the FOP. The judges of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court announced proudly that they accepted money from the FOP. They called it campaign contributions, of course. And whether bought or bullied, this millionaire Congress, who now have 10% support for defending the 1% of wealth, have sold what remains of their souls to the highest bidder. We need to cut out the middleman and just paste a giant $10 bill to the podium and background of Congress, for they are all for sale. What they have shown is you get what you pay for. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan.